Welcome to Perfectly Unfiltered, the podcast where I have perfectly unfiltered conversations with real people sharing real stories about redefining roles at home and in the workplace. I will also be talking with changemakers, learning what they are doing to open the doors for women and the realities of creating a diverse and inclusive workforce. Together, we can build a community where we all win. I'm your host, Noor Haisham Fawaz, and this is Perfectly Unfiltered. Welcome to another episode of Perfectly Unfiltered. Today, I'm in the driver's seat while Megan Switzer is on the other side and I get to ask her the questions. In December, I sat on her podcast, Doing Girly Things, and we had a great conversation about the work that she does in trying to attract more women into the industry while showcasing and breaking the stigma around women in the workforce. Megan has a master's in electrical engineering technology and has spent her professional career in design and being the GC of a large data center construction site. Recently, she has quit her job and moved to San Diego to pursue a side hustle, more like a startup, using her drone. She has plans to focus her career more to the energy sector and continue to run a successful side hustle and podcast. Megan, as I mentioned, is the podcast host for Doing Girly Things. If you haven't had a chance to listen to her podcast, I highly recommend you listen to it. It's all about making construction a girly thing to do. So excited to have you on my podcast, Megan.
Thank you. So excited.
Yeah, me too. We didn't have a shortage of things to talk about. We could relate to a lot of the things that we both do in trying to really shape the perception of what women can and want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get the listeners started with what made you decide to call the podcast Doing Girly Things?
Yes. Yeah. Well, thank you for having me on your show. It's such a pleasure to have you on my episode. But yeah, the episode or the title for the podcast, Doing Girly Things, came from one of my first jobs that I had to do. Was I was actually in charge of the substation. So I wasn't so high voltage. You had to wear FR gear, and the only gear that I was given, and so FR gear basically means if you catch on fire, your clothes burn and it doesn't melt to your skin. And so it's very important that you're wearing this and that you're wearing this specific type of clothing. And so, but the only clothing that they have were for men. And so I was the GC, I was the one in charge. And so I had to go out every day basically wearing men's clothes. And, you know, I was the one in charge. So it's kind of embarrassing because I'm wearing clothes that don't fit. And just everything along with it. And so I would look at the other woman in the office and I would say, oh, just off to go do girly things. And so we would just always joke about that, how like we were always like dressed up like men. We were always just like, we did not look like girls a lot of the times at work. And that was just the running joke, is every time we saw each other, it was like, you know, off to do girly things. And then I started thinking about how that's like, it is so true, is that we're forced to wear men's clothes to go do a female's job. And how many people feel that in their career and feel that even more, and they don't have the support of having somebody else in the office to like laugh and joke about it with. And so that was really why I started the podcast title. That was one, because it was kind of a catchphrase that people were used to hearing me say all the time, you know, just off to do girly things, but also because it was something that I felt could be almost a movement of the fact of like making construction a girly thing to do. Because I think a lot of the reason why women aren't seeing it as, because a lot of the women that I talk to on my podcast and I've listened to on your episodes, is a lot of them, this is their second career. Is construction was not what they found first. They found it because a significant other was in it. They found it because they started to realize that they could actually make money and provide for their families as single mothers and stuff. And so I really do think that like the whole premise is like making construction a girly thing to do. So that way then people know construction is something that girls can do, is like really where the whole podcast title came from.
I just love it. Like, I think it resonates so much with me, especially when you say you had to wear men's clothing while trying to fit in a very much male-dominated sector. And just in terms of saying, like, the gear that you're talking about, the FR gear, it's to keep you safe so your clothes don't burn through your skin. And it's wild to me to think that you couldn't find fitted women's safety gear.
Mm-hmm.
And did that ever change? Like, have you been able to find?
So they do make some, but the thing is that because it's this special material, the pants are $150 or, you know, they can be up to $350. And so at one point I had asked, you know, can we get women's, you know, high vis vests and everything so I can at least have that? And at first, you know, I was like, yeah, we'll do it, but I never got it. And I think a lot of it is that whenever the people that are ordering the clothing, because it was just kind of like a mass order, where it's like everybody that's working in the substation, you guys all look at your brand new clothes we just got for you. Aren't you guys excited? And there wasn't like people just didn't think about who was actually wearing these. It was like, yeah. Oh, we have to buy these. It's for safety. But who's the actual person that's wearing it? But also, I don't know if they even had the option, because, I mean, they gave me a small. Somebody thought of me. But okay. But the small was, I actually just got rid of that entire outfit. I probably should have kept it to at least do one more photo shoot in it.
You know what would have been really cool? I mean, I'm sure you could find us another small men's size outfit fairly easily. is to do a side by side what a small men's size fits like and what an actual fitted to my body in the workplace looks like.
Exactly. Because I honestly, whenever I bring it up to people, you know, I have issues with my high-vis vest not being made for women. The first thing people say to me is, well, why do you want your clothes so tight? What about this is fits differently than a man? And I think a lot of it is it comes from people thinking that women wear clothes to impress men. And that, like, women are always wearing clothes in to be sexualized and stuff. And that's not it. Is I enjoy wearing clothes like this because when I bend down, you don't see my underwear. I like to wear clothes like this because, like, I feel more confident. And, like, I don't feel confident because I look better, but because my clothes aren't hanging off of me. And so I think, like, that has been a really hard thing for me to overcome whenever I start to express to people about wanting women's clothes, is them understanding that it's not that I don't want something that's low cut. I'm not asking for the low cut version of this FR shirt. I'm asking for, like, one where the shoulder blades aren't coming halfway down my, you know, my arms. That's what I'm looking for.
It's interesting because I love how you said the sexual part is, or the aspect that we dress to impress, not the fact that we dress to be comfortable. Mm-hmm. And this is where, you know, I think of while I was in school, I did a study on the sports companies like Nike and Adidas, where they missed the boat and Lululemon just entered, was that they created workout gear for women by women so that women felt comfortable in attire and that they wanted to work out. That assumption that there needed to be a brand designed specifically for women was so key. And I look at the industry, the construction industry, the manufacturing industry, and it's time and time again that I hear from women in the industry, they can't find fitted gear. And ironically enough, I'm starting a committee with some really impressive women in the sector, and I would love for you to join us to talk about the underrepresentation of fitted gear. It's not a women's issue. It's a safety issue and an industry issue. How are we going to attract more women into this sector if we don't even have clothes that fit them, that's going to keep them safe on the job site?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And how are people going? It's like about representation too, is kind of what I see is whenever you start talking about being a woman in engineer, they see that you're wearing clothes that don't fit you. And so they're like, well, why would I want to go look all dorky?
Yeah, like,
and it's not like wanting to look hot and wanting to be sexualized, but it's wanting to look like you're comfortable, or that it's just because, like, I've seen FR clothing. There was one women's brand, I'm trying to think of the name off the top of my head, but there's one brand that someone sent to me, and they have, you know, a total of 4 or 5 shirts. And it's just that, like, when you order a large, you're getting a large because women are large in different areas than men are large in. So, like, women with bigger breasts, like you sometimes need a medium or a large because you have a bigger breast, but you don't necessarily need it to be super long like a man's large. And so I think about that a lot of time whenever like the safety aspect is like, how many times gloves are a big issue for me? My hands aren't necessarily small enough for like the women's small gloves, but they're not big enough for like the men's gloves. And so gloves are like something that I really struggle with finding to fit. And like that's your hands and that's dexterity. That's you being able to grab something. And jobs I was previously on, we were 100% gloves on. So, you know, whenever you have like that little like flimsy part at the end of your glove, like that just affects your like quality of being able to do what you need to do. And so it's important in the sense too, I always think about it too, like the hidden figures that how you had to go to the bathroom and the bathroom was so far away. And it's just like stuff like that where there is a price that you pay whenever you don't have clothes that fit you. Are you tripping and falling? Are there other safety hazards that are happening because your clothes are too long? And so for me personally, that was one of them, was my pants, they were too long. And so I would kind of like tuck the back ends into my boots so that way then I wouldn't trip over them if I stepped backwards.
And like, did no one at your company ever try to lead an initiative to get women's gear?
No, I think I honestly did myself a little bit of a disservice about joking about it, because when I joked about it, I kind of told them that that was fine. This is a joke. So that's my only regret, is that I wish I kind of would have said, yeah, I'm joking about this because it's like kind of a coping mechanism, not because like this is really fine. Because like, I think for them, they're like, oh, well, she wears it, it's totally fine, like whatever. But yeah.
I wouldn't actually put the accountability back on you. I feel that that's one thing that we continuously try to strive and advocate for when we're talking to companies that are talking about, we can't attract more women into our sector. We can't attract more representation from this particular group. And so what I find is that there is a great response in terms of a great diversity, equity, and inclusion statement on their website. There may be some verbiage in the welcome package that you get when you start in the company, but then you start looking at the culture and the environment and the conversations and the willingness to really recognize that, yes, Megan wearing really large pants and really big gloves actually impacts her. And she has to joke around about it so that she doesn't come off like she's complaining or worried about being signaled out because now she's asking for more. Where, and when I hear you speak, it should be the bare minimum. The bare minimum should be that there's a woman's washroom that you don't have to walk 5 to 10 minutes to get to. And you should have fitted safety gear. Simple, like biologically, we're different. And so we would never expect men to fit into a size small woman's shirt that comes up to, and like his whole stomach is showing, right? Because like men are just, their chests are more broad, but we have more fat on our breasts, right? So it's just interesting the dynamic and the perception on how we view the basic needs, a basic environment that everyone has a right to receive. Yet we're not there yet.
Yeah, exactly.
So what advice do you have for companies, employers, leaders that are tuning in and are now thinking, yeah, shit, we don't have women's gear?
I really do think that you should take a look at like, what do you provide for? So hard hats, safety vest, and safety glasses and gloves are the general basics. So I personally like to take a look at like, what's a small change that you could look at that would have the biggest impact? And I think for construction companies in general, understanding that there are, I know of at least four different, and off the top of my head, but that I've seen through Instagram and stuff, high-vis vests that are made for women. And so I think just making it a company culture, because I've been at construction companies, one in particular where you show up and I asked one of the girls, I was like, man, that vest fits you really nicely. And she's like, yeah, they have vests for women here. And I was like, oh my gosh, I want to work there. And so like, that is like maybe a 50-cent price difference. Like I've looked at the cost. Like it's not like the women's ones are extra, or you know, made of platinum or like anything. Like it's the same cost. And so I think like that stuff that like women notice and other women wearing it. So like I notice when another woman's vest fit her properly. I saw the company's back thing on the back of her thing, and I was like, that company provides vests for women. So what other women policies do they have? And so for me, like, I would just take a look at, like, what's the bare minimum of PPE that you're providing for your employees? And are there ways to make it so that way then, not that it's, we don't want gender neutral. That's not what we're looking for. And I think that that's, like, one issue is they're like, okay, well, we'll just provide more gender neutral stuff. Well, when you provide more gender neutral stuff, it generally fits men.
Yeah.
So it specifically needs to be for women. Like, unisex, no. And so that, I think that that would be, is like, look at like the basic PPE that you're providing. And instead of making unisex so quote unquote fits all, you actually make specific men versus women clothing.
It's interesting that you talk about just the basics, the bare minimum. So one of the conversations I recently had with a large construction company, and I know that they are working extremely hard to make their environment and their culture more diverse and really advocating for more inclusive practices. So she did talk to me about the price list that she found for women's high, quite honestly, it was the vests, high visibility vests. The difference was astronomical. This is in Canada.
Okay.
So I was shocked. And then I said, it's probably, there's buying power, right? Like, so naturally, like you had mentioned, we assume that it's unisex is more geared and fitted towards men. And so we will order those in large quantities. But how many women were on that job site of yours?
I see what you're saying. Yeah, because if you buy it in a pack of 100 versus, yeah, on my job site, I think there were 5. So if you buy it in a pack of 5, yeah, it's going to look like you spent $5. Yeah, I see. Yeah.
Yeah. But then the question is, that is still a small price to pay.
Exactly.
Like, you're still technically paying a small price.
And if you think about from my point of view, if that company spent that extra whatever, and then if they're really trying to recruit more women, then me being a woman in the industry, I see that that company is providing that for women. That's like, that is the easiest recruitment that you can do.
Exactly.
Is by giving the women that you do have. And I think that that's the other thing is like with recruitment is we need to also be thinking more about retention. Because I think as much as important as recruitment is for these companies, retention is just as important, and that leads to more recruitment. And so retaining them, and like I would have been with that safety vest, I'd sent it off actually to like 3 or 4 people, and they're like, yeah, we're gonna start getting these. We never did. But yeah, it is. It's a small price to pay in the end. So what is it? Like, you know, 5 times that, but you bought 500 safety vests for men at what price?
It's so interesting. Yeah, especially with the shortage and the demand for more skilled people that you would think in the grand scheme of things, this is a short-term investment for a long-term gain. Because ultimately, yeah, like if you don't feel that you belong simply because of the culture or environment or the structure or the system that you work within, you're going to leave. So how do you feel about the argument about sanitary washrooms? So one thing that I was thinking about the other day are women on job sites and then having a shared porta potty or no place for them to dispose of their or to change their menstrual materials. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so on the company I worked for previously, we did have a policy. And so we had pink porta potties, and every job site had to have a pink porta potty. And one point we actually had, so we also had this QR code that you could go and you could submit any sort of safety ticket. So if you saw something unsafe, you could submit it as the GC, we would get it and we would take action. Well, one time we got a ticket and it said, there's no woman's restroom on the east side. I have to walk all the way here. And I, cause we all get it sent to our phone. I come out of my office and I was like, somebody needs to fix this right now. I was like, this is a serious issue. And so I think it's important because the trailer that I was in, I was fortunate enough to have a toilet, but because we had a toilet that had a pump, it would sometimes freeze if we didn't use it over the weekend. And I would seriously rather use a toilet that had no water in it than go use the porta potties, because it is just one of those things where we've accepted that they're going to be disgusting. And so getting job sites to understand that that's important to people, and there's a health factor about it. I have never worked on a job, or I guess I lived in Las Vegas. We actually ended up in Las Vegas. Our porta potties would get so hot, they would get up to 140 degrees. We ended up building a little shed over the top of them just to prevent it. And I think it was only because enough men had complained about it, because there was only one women's restroom underneath there. But I do think that all job sites, one, for the safety of women, just because I do know that there is a lot of sexual harassment that does happen on job sites, and to feel safe in a porta potty. And so our job sites, we had pink porta potties with, they had their own little code on them.
Okay. I like that step. I was going, interestingly, that you mentioned that they're pink. How do you feel about the pink gear?
It's a love hate. It's the same. I love it because I personally like I'm more of like a burnt pink is kind of my color.
Yeah.
So like I like it, but like the obnoxious hot pink is just, it's
obnoxious.
It's obnoxious. And I think
it's insulting. Like, yeah, I agree.
Whenever it's pink and nothing else about it is feminine, to me, it's kind of an insult. So like the pink tools that you're like, okay, well, is this tool smaller to fit women's hands better? What about this? It makes it pink, or is it just pink? So that way then women buy this version. And so that one's hard for me because, yeah, it is one of those things you're like, yeah, I do love the color sometimes. But in college, my dad got me like a little cover and it was pink. And he's like, that way nobody in the engineering class, you'll always know in the engineering classes which one's yours.
I mean, the intent was there, but like, I get it. Interestingly enough, I never liked the pink gear either. And oftentimes I hear from women in the industry that they also don't appreciate it. So. And it's interesting that you're like, burnt orange is my thing, because that's, burnt orange is my favorite color. So,
yep.
So this is interesting, and not that I want to talk about our menstrual cycle, but I think it's really important because, again, it talks about the infrastructure that we have for women in the workplace to ensure that they're safe, healthy, and confident in focusing on their work and not having to worry about the rest of the stuff that men just naturally take for granted because the world was designed in most cases for men by men. So I don't know if you've heard of this company called NYX. I've been sharing it with as many people as I can. And I wanted to reach out to them to say, there's an opportunity here for tradeswomen, because they created underwear that replaces the pads. So you don't have to change it. And that was another aspect. I'm like, hey, well, that's pretty creative. I wonder what that would look like, or how that would support tradeswomen that don't have access to a facility for 8 hours of the day or 10 hours of the day. But I think that this is a perfect example of a woman founder, Joanna, focusing on the specific needs of women and saying, we need to be able to create attire that is comfortable, but also meets women's needs.
I love actually the underwear, the pad underwear, like the period panties that you're talking about.
Yeah.
So I say almost exactly like what you're saying. I personally got them because I was doing 12-hour days and I would have to be out in the field for like, 4 or 5 hours at a time, restroom breaks, it's hit or miss. And so I agree with you. I do think, and I've been telling a lot of people, I don't think that they, in my personal opinion, replace a tampon, but they are a good, nice tampon and a backup method. So like I use them like what you're saying. And I've thought the same thing, because I'm like, you don't have to change anything. So you don't have this mess where you're like, where am I going to actually dispose of this? But also from personally using them, I haven't had them leak, and they last all day. And so I have found them to be a nice replacement for whenever you are on the go and you're like, where am I going to put a tampon? Like, where am I going to put a spare tampon?
Exactly.
And yes. I've put tampons in my high-vis vests, but whenever you're moving around all day, they come out of the package and you're like, well, I don't want to use this now that it's been around like heavy metals, like the tools that have been in my jacket too. So you're like, okay, well, now do I use this that's been like possibly around all of this like rusted steel, or like, what do I do? And so I think you're onto something too, because it helps women that don't have access, or a lot of the women that I've met, like a lot of the surveyors, they'll just be out in the middle of like fields and, you know, their work, there's no restrooms until they go to a gas station.
Exactly. Yes.
And so I think that that's a huge market for them, because yeah, big fan of them. If any listeners are listening, I would definitely recommend taking a look at them, because I think that they make me feel more confident, because I don't feel like I need to worry about something happening while I'm standing outside all day. And I don't feel gross. Like, I definitely am ready to take them off whenever it's like time to get home, but it's not as gross as what I thought it was going to be.
No, certainly. And I totally agree. And for anyone that's tuning in and you're wondering, it's worth the order, but it's interesting because the podcast is called Perfectly Unfiltered. And while this may seem like an uncomfortable conversation for some of the men that may be tuning in, I think it's important, because if you're a man in the industry and you're part of that decision-making process, asking these questions, like, have we thought through our job sites to ensure that everyone feels safe and comfortable? Everyone has access to sanitary facilities. And interestingly enough, the men that I've talked to that work in the industry, they're like, it makes sense to want sanitary washrooms. As men, we also want sanitary washrooms. So the more we make it a safety hazard, that if it's not, then everyone is going to jump on board. So, but it's just kind of moving the needle forward and having these open conversations, because for some cases, if you've never had to think about it, and if you've never lived in that space or didn't have a significant other that complained about it, then you wouldn't know, right? So you wouldn't even think about it. And this is your chance to now do something about it. And I think that your previous employer, with all due respect, should have done something about it. Whether it was one or five people, the safety hazard was there. And in order to ensure full protection, you should have had fitted gear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
That's me going on a tangent, because it's so interesting, because I literally sent an email on Monday saying to two directors of different organizations, one's a union and one's a construction company. And I said, let's start a committee and let's bring voice to this issue, because personally, I feel like it's a relatively easy fix. We just need a collective effort to bring a lot of attention to it.
Well, and I think what I get frustrated, at least the comment that I always see on the internet, I don't know if you've met technically a techie yet. She's Canada based and she does a lot with workwear. And she'll get this comment all the time about, well, the reason why there's not women's work clothes available is because there's not people to buy them. And like, that just frustrates me, because it's like, how do you know that we're not willing to buy it if you've never made the market for us? If we've always been lumped in with buying men's clothes.
Certainly. Yeah. The options weren't there.
Exactly. And so if you've never done a market, and so I just get so frustrated, because it's like, there are so many women that need warm clothes that fit them, that they can be agile in and be out in the field and, you know, be bending up and down and have pockets for all of their tools. Like, women want that, and they don't. Yeah. And I agree with you. It is a frustrating thing to see so many people complain about it. You're like, are you guys just not hearing us complaining about it? Is that the issue here?
It's not even complaint. It's like raising concerns. Like, this is actually a concern, and honestly, an opportunity for you to expand your market. Yeah, I know, we know Consenza. She's one of our influencers, and she just participated on one of our events called Trades Campus.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yes. I saw that she did. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So she's incredible. But yes, and I've actually shared her YouTube channel with this committee, because I thought she is a great representation of, first of all, knowing what women's gear is out there, and then bringing attention to the need for more fitted gear. And so, interestingly enough, when I was leading a skill trades program for women, this is dating back 6 years ago, I was inquiring with one of my mentors about potentially starting a safety brand for women by women. 6 years ago, and this is like way before there was as much attention as there is now. And I only imagine if someone had really led that movement 6 years ago, how far we would have made it. And then also the whole aspect, like you said, it's a retention issue.
Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah.
So what do you feel companies could do better for retention?
There's a couple things that one, and I laugh about this because I realize that this is a United States issue and definitely not an issue you guys have necessarily in Canada. But in the United States specifically, I think one thing companies could do is look at their policies for like maternity leave. If at the federal level, we're not going to look at this, we definitely, companies need to start looking at this, because there's a lot of times where women only get 2 weeks to 6 weeks off. There's no minimum here in the United States.
That's crazy to me. Like,
yeah,
I would have a significantly different fight in the US.
Yeah. Well, and what was funny is I kind of said something about this on my podcast, and it was somebody in Australia, and they're like, Megan, that's an issue you have in the United States. We don't have that everywhere in the developed countries. And I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So at least coming as somebody from the United States, I really do think that if you want more women to stay there, if we are not going to do this at a federal level, you need to start doing this per company. So you need to start saying, okay, well, what resources do we have? Do we have, what medical options do we have? Are we allowing couples to do in vitro? Is that something? Are we, you know, being heterosexual? Are we allowing homosexuals to, like, what are our policies there? Because like, there's a lot, at least in the United States, where there's some discrimination that can go on there. And so I think that, okay, yeah, these are federal minimums or they don't exist, but what can you as a company do to provide it? So that way then it makes it so that way then women want to work there. Women don't care if there's ping pong in the table. We don't care if there's free beer. We don't care. You know, there's a lot of this stuff that big tech is offering, Google and all this other stuff. And, you know, that's nice. It attracts a 20 something year old fresh out of college and doesn't really understand that you're doing this, so that way then they never leave work, so that way then they work more. But I think,
so true.
It is. And personally, I've personally stopped drinking just because I think that there's a lot with the drinking culture that it puts women in positions that are dangerous. And so I just personally just don't do it. And I think that there's a lot of stories that I have heard from my coworkers about being at these big tech companies and the drinking culture and how there's free alcohol at work, which makes it so people do stuff that they normally wouldn't do at work, say things to coworkers. And so, I mean, why don't you just offer people longer maternity leave? Take out all the free beer. Let's just like,
why don't you just give us access to our basic rights, right?
Yeah. And so, yeah, or like daycare. And like, I think that, or for me personally, like the flex hours, the ability to, you know, if somebody needs to come in and have their job start at 5, so then they can be done by 1 o'clock, so they can be at home to get the kids off the bus because their partner takes care of the daytime, putting them on the bus. I think that as a company, if you allow that, you're allowing more women to work there, and you're also probably making the men happier too.
Yeah.
And so I think that there's policies that the generation before us was like, you know, this is the work week, this is what work looks like. And they were very used to having a partner at home to take care of all the stuff that is considered free labor. And so there's a book that I was just reading, and it talked a lot about the free labor that women do and just that amount and what it's like to work at work and then go work at home. But as far as the companies can help with that, I think it's looking at the policies. What time are people supposed to be there? What other policies can you help get rid of all of this dorky stuff that big tech's providing coworkers, and let's like provide stuff that people actually need and want. I don't know what childcare looks like in Canada, but it's also another miserable experience down here in the United States.
Yeah, no, it's something that, I mean, it's expensive in Canada, sure. It's not affordable. And that's something that's a reoccurring theme that comes in every conversation that we have about women in the workforce is, first off, do we even have flexible daycare so that it doesn't start at 7 and just end at 5? Like, what about the night shifts? That's one aspect. But then you mentioned a really good point in terms of the policies and the, again, back to environment and culture, the things that we think attract the talent, and it's only attracting one gender. Because as women, you mentioned it, like oftentimes I hear from young women that say, well, I pick careers that are family friendly. And what they mean by that is the ability to be a mom and in the workforce. And I argue that it shouldn't have to be that way. And having just gone, like my daughter just turned one on Friday, like last week. And I never took parental leave. My husband took the parental leave. So in Canada, as you know, we have you can take 12 to 18 months. Although what they do is they take your 12-month payment and stretch it into 18 months, which makes it not affordable. So that's something that I'm not really, yeah, it's 18 months, but like who can afford that? Only people that have the wealthy. But my husband and I talked very closely and deeply about this. And he decided to take the parental leave because his company had just announced a global shift in policy that would top up their workforce's pay for, essentially they were trying to encourage more men because it's a male dominated sector, and they topped him up for 5 months.
Oh, wow.
So he got paid full salary for 5 months to stay home with my daughter. And so that's an excellent example of what companies can do. And in certain cases, profitable companies should do, because not only now did he give me the ability and the opportunity and the our family, the opportunity for me to then focus on leading my national not-for-profit and really not being able to afford to take some time off. I also experienced what it was like going back to work within 2 weeks of having a baby. And quite honestly, there is a lot to it. I don't know how women in the US do it. I would not want to do it again. It's too much. Just all the body change, your hormone change, your identity, the unpaid labor hours. Like I've been tracking my hours for the last couple of weeks because I'm like, I'm just always so tired. Like, what do I do in a day? Because you just forget what you do.
Yeah.
And literally from the second my eyes open to the second I force them to close, it's probably a good 15 to 16 hours of nonstop. Like between juggling my career, my organization, to feeding, bathing, playing with the kids, cleaning the house. Like there's just so much. And I have a supportive partner. Like I have a partner that, you know, is very supportive, but yet women are still taxed with not only the emotional aspect of everything it takes to be a working mom, but also the physical. And so, yeah, now more than ever, progressive companies really need to have these conversations about what it's going to take.
And like, so this is one stigma that I would really like, I wish we could end, is I do think that working women need housekeepers or should not feel guilty about getting them. My aunts and I, we have all banded together and we all agree that somebody comes and cleans our houses once a month and that's okay.
Oh yeah, I'm all for it.
That's a, and you should not, and I try to help other women feel this. I'm like, you should not feel bad that somebody else comes to your house and cleans for 3 hours, because think of what you were able to do in those 3 hours. And you gave her money. Like, it wasn't like she did it for free either. Like, you're helping her support herself. And so I think, like, I wish more women would get housekeepers to help them with just some of that unpaid labor, like pay somebody else to do that labor, because you're doing it unpaid. And how much an hour is it costing of your life? And so, yeah, my family, my aunts and I, we were like, we're done being shameful about this. This is just how, if you're working 40, 50, 60 hours a week, that all the listeners do not feel ashamed. It's just, and if you don't have one, once you get one, it's amazing. It's amazing.
I'm all for it. Anything that I could pay someone else to do that gives me some of my me time back and some time to focus on myself and my family, I'm all for it. So I definitely advocate for that. So it looks like we always, you and I can talk for hours, which I'm actually thinking between both of our podcasts, I don't know if you'd be open to this, we should do like a monthly episode. bouncing back, because we could talk about so many different topics.
I was thinking, I was like, we could just keep going.
We could go for a while, yeah. But there's this question that I really want to ask you that came up in a conversation with a company last week. And I really sat and I'm thinking about it, and I want to present this company some suggestions. But essentially what I said to them was, as you know, like, I speak to a lot of tradeswomen, a lot of women in the industry, and some who I've become really good friends with, and they share their experiences with me and their journey. And it's absolutely incredible. And I'm so honored that they trust me with such deep and personal information. And one mom, speaking of the labor force and daycare and whatnot and juggling, she's a single mother and has three kids, they're school age kids. And when she first started at this company who has women in the workforce, but they've never had a tradeswoman, that she was the first. And so she talked about how the first question she said to me was, what's the schedule like? Because if there's midnight shifts or shift work, it's going to be challenging. Like, I'm a single mother of three. Like, I have to be home with my kids in the evening. So at the time I think they only had it like once a month, maybe every other month. And then recently they switched it to 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, like the change in schedule. And she had a heart to heart with me. And let me tell you, the pay is exceptional. The environment is great. Everything about it is incredible. But this poor woman feels like she's struggling every single day because she's like, I don't see my kids. And what am I supposed to do? So I brought this up to the employer, and he brought up some really great points, but I still thought it brings me back to the conversation we just had for the last 45 minutes. I said, have you considered having a family-friendly policy where individuals who have to take care of their kids, both men or women, like it could be a father as well, or even I think of our generation that's going to have to take care of their parents, the elderly, right? That's something else we don't even talk about enough. And have you considered like maybe potentially paying a slight premium to those that do work those shifts that you feel that not many people will want to work? And the response was, there's just no way that could ever happen. And then, you know, he listed some really valid points about this is production. And like, if we did it, we're unionized. Like if we did it for one person, we'd have to do it for everyone and so on and so forth. And what about the fathers and people need to make it work? And then I thought to myself, but we need to start somewhere, and the conversation needs to start. And we may not have the perfect solution as we start the conversation, but eventually, once we talk about it and we brainstorm and get creative, I think that's the thing, is that just because it's always been done this way does not mean we need to continue on doing it this way. It's not working. Like, more and more companies are saying we can't diversify our workforce. Yeah, because you designed a workforce that was conducive to one gender, that was attractive to one gender. And now the whole system is being disrupted. Women are entering the workforce. They're completing their education at a far faster rate. They want to work. We need dual income. Inflation's on the rise. Like, companies must shift their mindsets. So what would you say to this company? Like, what advice would you give them?
The first opinion that flashed through my mind would be to have them calculate how much money they're spending on happy hours and stuff like that, and ask, like, is the, like, I don't know, like, it really is. It's just one of those things where it's like, you guys spend so much money on stuff that people don't care about. What if you put, and that was just how the workforce worked, and that's just what people had. And I know, like, at least in construction, it's very big, at least where I was, where there's tons of happy hours. So much money was spent on it. And it's like, what if we spent all this money to, like you're saying, reward people who are doing XYZ? Or what if we provide this, like, for that woman, what if she, like, it was a different work week where she was able to, like, change shifts so she had Fridays off so she could see her, or, like, you know, she did 4/10s instead, so that way then she could go see her family, like, on Fridays or whatever it be. It's hard whenever companies immediately tell you the union, because I get frustrated with that excuse, because that's a big excuse for basically construction companies saying, like, I see what you're asking, but I don't really want to try and make it work. at least like here in the United States, because somebody can say the word union and it's like, yeah, you're right. We don't want to deal with the union. All right. Well, next idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a scapegoat. And I don't effectively know how to get around that scapegoat yet, because I don't know enough about the union to understand, like, are their fears valid, or is this really something that we need, that like what they're saying, like, oh, well, we'll have to pay this person. It's like, could we talk to somebody first? Could we maybe, you know, work it? Let's see what we'd actually have to do.
Yeah. Let's see what, and he was willing. He's like, you know what? You know, I've never really thought about it. He's like, let me sit with this. And you know what? After that conversation, I thought to myself, first off, thank you for being so candid. Like, really, I need more people to say, like, this is what comes to mind, and these are mm-hmm. my own biases, because that's the only way we can challenge it. I don't want to preach to the choir continuously. But then having someone like him say, okay, but I'm willing to sit down and let's talk about this further. I'm willing to look mm-hmm. at some of the data that you have or some suggestions. And I think that that's very, very, very valuable. So, but I think we're onto something, Megan, mm-hmm. you and I. Yeah. I think you and I can chat again, because no word of a lie, I got to the first question on this sheet that I have that I never really follow. But I want to give time for you to just say a couple of things to make it about you, because you're so incredible and so humble, and I love your voice. I love everything you advocate for. Your perspective is so wise, and you're going to continue on changing the world. And I hope that your dream drone business is going to just flourish. I have no doubt.
Thank you.
What's next on your agenda? Like, how could people find you, follow you, support you?
Yeah. So I kind of mentioned it a little bit through the podcast episode, but recently I just quit my job being a GC, and I have started a drone business. So I am very passionate about saving energy and building envelopes, roofing, just how to make buildings more energy efficient. So what I am doing is creating maintenance-based contracts with my drone to basically come and monitor, create 3D models, and just create a way for you to track your building's performance. And so if you follow me, Drone Detective is where I'm posting all of my drone stuff. And so you can see, right now I'm in Southern California, so it's just awesome videos, especially if you're in Canada, of being in the warm sun.
So jealous.
Yeah, it's gonna be up into the almost 70s today. So
don't tell me that there's like snow outside. I'm like, why? I'm like, why couldn't just winter pass us by?
I know. I can't. Yeah, when people are like, where do you get winter gear at? I'm like, I don't know right now. And then my podcast is Doing Girly Things Podcast. Episode every other week. You can find us on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts. We are also on Instagram. I have recently started to make reels. I'm starting to find the fun in it. And yeah, now that it's fun, it's good to do. But yeah. And so I will be spending the next couple months getting my drone business up off the ground.
I am really excited. That's really incredible. For those that are like wondering, like, where do they start if they have a brilliant idea like yours? Like, how, mm-hmm. like, can you share some best practices or tips or steps that you've taken?
So one, how I really found it was I found this other girl, and she's like, I'm trying to get more girls into drones. And I was like, you know what? I just want to fly one. So I bought one, flew it, and I was like, I like this. But like actually getting started, I'm taking a business course through, and it's a specific drone business course. And I ended up winning it. I submitted my business plan and, you know, top business plan, got this whole course. And so, but I have found it where if I would not have won it, I would recommend people buy something like that, that is in your niche. I know that there's a couple schools that or a couple like organizations or clubs, whatever you want to call it, for just like contractors. So it's like accountability groups. So I'm also in Impact Theory, which is an accountability group online. And so I like that because there are people from all over the world, and we go on there once a week. We all have a goal. So we have a 90-day goal right now, and they just hold you accountable. And it's people that have other goals. Some of them are like to become public speakers, whatever it be. But it's nice to be around people that are also achieving things and also starting businesses. So they say you're like the five most people that you surround yourself with. So if you're surrounding yourself with five people that keep telling you that your business is not going to make it, that, you know, this is a really hard thing to do, blah, 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 you're not going to start it. And so I guess my biggest thing would be, one, to join something like Impact Theory, that's Tom Bilyeu, or find a community, because that's really been the most helpful for me. Because at first you're like, I don't think I can do this. And then there's like all these people in the background. They're like, you can.
And you certainly can, Megan. I've been watching your story and journey, and I have no doubt that anything you start, you're going to conquer.
Well, thank you. So yes, definitely I would recommend, but that's like construction. I mean, that's why I started the podcast. And so I joke that the podcast in some way has made me love construction more. And I hope it's done the same thing for other people, because I finally found a community that I'd been searching for. And I didn't realize that there were so many women in construction until I got on Instagram. And so if you're struggling and you're like, I just feel so alone, there's just no one out there, there's a beautiful community. I'm trying to get involved in the Clubhouse one. There's quite a few girls that meet on there and have really great discussions, but just staying in touch with people and not isolating is the big one.
Well, I'd love for you to share some of those communities with us that we can give a shout out to. Yeah. And encourage more of our community to participate in. And Megan, I have some thoughts running through my head that I want to talk to you about offline. So, okay. And I think it's kind of exciting, and I've been wanting to come to LA for a while, or California. So we should probably talk about that.
Yeah.
I'm sure you know Tools and Tiara.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Have you met the founder?
I have not.
Okay. So we should do a meetup at some point after COVID restrictions and things ease up. There's some amazing trailblazing women, including yourself, in the US that I would love to bring together and just have like this incredible meet and greet and share some ideas.
Is she in Louisiana or?
She's in LA.
She is. Okay. Oh, okay.
She's in LA, and she is like, we've had her be a keynote at at a couple of our events, and I could listen to her speak all day, every day. At all times. Like, her name is Judalene Cassidy, and okay. She's just such a lovely soul.
I'll have to get, you said you did an episode with her?
I didn't record
a podcast. A keynote speaker. Okay.
But like, you know what? I should record a podcast with her. I should shoot her a message.
Because I was like, okay, I'll instantly leave here and go download that.
I have not done that, but I would like to record a podcast with her, hopefully. Yeah, you know what? She's so sweet. Tools and Tiaras. Anyways, she is from LA, so.
Okay, no, yeah.
Because I remember joking around and saying, I'm going to come and meet you in person after COVID. So Here's another excuse. Because you said right now, where are you?
I'm in San Diego. So,
San Diego, yeah.
But it's if you're in San Diego, you always have friends that are in LA. It's vice versa. It's like the same thing.
Okay. I said, okay. Well, I've never been, so you'll have to show me around when I go
there. San Diego's better, though. I'll tell you that much.
Okay. Well, listen, Megan, if there are any conferences that are...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Like this topic related, I'd love to come and join you. And brainstorming session. Okay. Cool.
Love that. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Megan. Always so incredible to talk to you. And if you haven't listened to the podcast I recorded with Megan on doing girly things, make sure you download that episode, and we will add all her social media handles to the show notes, and please give her a follow. And then once again, Megan, thank you for being perfectly unfiltered and joining me on the show today.
Thank you. Thank you so much.